From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we present an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast, in which Hank talked with Brother Andreas Knopp, author of The Last Christians, Stories of Persecution, Flight, and Resilience in the Middle East. Now, here is Hank Hanegraaff.
And welcome to another edition of Hank Unplugged. This is the podcast that takes me out of the studio into the study. I interview some of the most interesting and enlightening people on the planet, and today is no exception. I have an opportunity to interview Andreas Knopp, and he wrote a book called The Last Christians, Stories of Persecution, Flight, and Resilience in the Middle East. I feel we have a little in common in that we're both Scandinavian. I was born in Holland. Andreas is German. And we both wrote about Islam, but his book is a first-hand account that came about in a very, very unusual way. And I want to talk about that in just a few moments. But what's very interesting to me about Andreas is that he was the head of a seminary, and he has chosen to live in a different way today. He is a monastic member of the Little Brothers of the Gospel. This is a group that consciously seeks to live at the margins of society. And I look at some of his poetry. He is a poet as well as a scholastic. And I think of the phrases, the faces of the people are the icons we venerate. And in the countenances marked by suffering, we see the crucified one. Or a couple of other phrases from a poem, no longer harboring illusions of greatness. You humble yourself as human. Only God is great. Adoration now belongs to Him alone. I am so delighted to welcome Andreas Knopp to the podcast today, all the way from Germany, and I think it's around 9 o'clock your time, and thanks for joining us.
Okay, thank you, Hank. Here we have just 9 o'clock in the evening. I returned just from the prison where I am accompanying some prisoners, and now I'm very happy that we can meet us by this phone line and discuss and have a good conversation, I hope.
You speak English very, very well. I wish I could speak German as well as you speak English. So,
yes, but my English is very old. I learned English at school more than 30 years ago, and I never practiced. And so today I took my dictionary to look for some words. So I hope that we can really have a good conversation.
You know, I want to start this conversation by having you explain a little more about the Little Brothers of the Gospel, as I was talking about in the introduction. I mean, this is a group of people that seeks to live on the margins of society. Why is that? What are you accomplishing?
Yes, this is a very small religious order. Therefore, we also have the name the Little Brothers, because it's a little group. It was inspired by Charles de Foucauld. He was a French noble born in a rich family, and he began a career in the army and later as a geographic explorer of Morocco, of the Sahara. And as a student, he lost the Christian faith of his family. But when he met the praying Muslim people in the Sahara, he wondered about religion. He became a seeker of God, and then he rediscovered the Christian faith. And he wanted to imitate Jesus. So that means for him the Son of God as a poor and simple worker at the margin of society. And he was convinced that God shows his love in Jesus, because love always looks for being near to the beloved person. He wants to join the beloved person. So God became a simple carpenter to share the everyday life of the little and poor people. And then Charles de Foucauld returned to the Sahara to be a witness to his love of God. He wanted to live nearby a people which never heard about the gospel of Jesus. So he joined a nomadic tribe in the south of Algeria, the Tuaregs. He himself lived as a Bedouin and became a friend of this nomadic people. And then during the First World War, he was killed accidentally as one of so many innocent victims of every war. So he was the person who inspired the foundation of our little congregation.
And so what's interesting to me is how you became a part of that little congregation. I mean, you were the head of a seminary, and now you've made this incredible transition where you were experiencing the fellowship of the sufferings of Jesus Christ.
Yes, it's true. I studied in Freiburg theology and philosophy, and then I made a doctorate in ethics. And my bishop sent me then to the University of Freiburg, and I loved this commitment because sharing with young people filled me with enthusiasm. But then I discovered that there is missing something in my life. I wanted to share more the life of the poor people. Maybe it was the daily reading of the gospel which inspired me. That was one of the sources. And then when I met the brothers of the gospel, I discovered the beauty of a simple life. And this is until today something which is attracting me. In our flat here, we have no TV, no car. We are living in a quarter which is marked by poor people. And this presence among women and men at the margin helps us to look for other values, for spiritual values, like brotherhood and solidarity. So I was attracted by this vision of sharing my life with brothers. In our flat, we have no living room but a chapel, because the prayer and the silence is important for our spiritual life. And we try to share also the conditions of our neighbors in working and in a social level. So I worked here in Leipzig as a cleaner or at the conveyor belt. The imitation of Jesus, who lived as a simple worker, helps us to grow in our friendship with Jesus and with the people to whom Jesus felt to be sent in a special way. And these were the people put at the margin of society. So this is a little bit our spiritual idea.
You know, when you think about it, this is a robust form of Christianity. And what I mean by that is that this is real Christianity. So often we are taught about the health and the wealth gospel in the Western world, that if you turn on to Jesus Christ, you can have a palace like the Taj Mahal, you can have a Rolls Royce in your driveway. Christ becoming a means to an end as opposed to Christ being the end. And when I listen to your testimony and story, it evokes great emotion within me. I'm thinking about another friend of mine, very similar to you. His name is Father Themi. He was a very famous musician in Australia. Then he went on to get academic degrees, PhDs, and eventually, in the midst of his prosperity, in the midst of his position in life as it continued to grow with influence, he decided to give it all up and to go to one of the poorest places in the world, Sierra Leone, Western Africa. And his life has been dramatically changed because now he has taken on the servant role that you have described. And I suppose the thing I'd like most is for you to tell our audience the satisfaction of giving it all up, as it were, so that you can send ahead that which is done, the cup of cold water, the piece of bread in the name of Jesus Christ. You can send it ahead for eternity, where Jesus said, do not labor for that which perishes, but rather labor for that which is eternal.
Yes, we try to live a little bit of that. So our reality also is very mixed. We try to convert us ourselves and to to grow with reading the gospel and in sharing. So for us, it's very important also that we are four brothers here, that we are sharing once a week what we are living in our prayer, in our relations, and also in our work. And then we help each other to discover what can you really live from the truth of the gospel. I think the gospel has for every person another truth, because the gospel is always personal. The vocation of God means me personally, but in sharing with brothers, so we help to deepen this personal vocation.
Kind of interesting, as you think about where you live right now, one of the great lands of the Reformation, whatever one might think about the Reformation, there's a whole history there. It's often romanticized, but nonetheless, you live in a country that was once the epitome of Christianity, and today it's largely secularized, and oftentimes Christianity is seen to be the enemy, and the mantra prevails that Islam is a religion of peace and tolerance, and Christianity is a crusader religion. Talk about that whipsaw, that transition from a country that espoused the Christian faith to one that now denigrates it.
Yes, I'm just living in the east of Germany, and there is a long story of secularization. It was also the experience that the Christians between themselves were in war. They had the war of 30 years. And so I think this experience that Christians are fighting against Christians in the name of their religion, that destroyed the roots of the faith in the gospel. And so we have to rediscover that the Christian faith cannot be preached and lived with violence. Jesus chose the way of nonviolence. He preferred to be a victim of violence, and he didn't take a sword in his hand. But in the time, in the course of the centuries, this was forgotten because there was the temptation of political power. And so in Germany, and at all in the east of Germany, a lot of people just since centuries lost their faith in the gospel. And so in Leipzig, we have 90% people without religion. They are no Muslims, no Christians, no Buddhists. And when you ask them, they say, oh, I'm nothing. I am not religious. Religion for me is not interesting. That doesn't say, tell me nothing. And so it's important for us as little brothers of the gospel just to be present in this ambience of people who lost the faith in God and in Jesus.
It sounds a little bit to me like you're talking about the fusion of Christians, the answer to Christ's high priestly prayer that they all might be as one. And if there is a solidarity amongst Christians around the essentials of the Christian faith, then we have a power to share with the world that is not there when we are fractured, when we experience fission.
Yes, I think that would be very necessary today, because it was just the aim of Jesus, just his prayer for the unity between the Christians, a unity which respects the difference, because there are different languages, cultures, traditions. We have to respect them. And I think that if we want really to live the gospel today, we have to live in a very large and free ecumenical spirit. So we have to discover that all the confessions, all the different Christian confessions bring a rich spiritual, theological, and cultural tradition with them. And we see this also with our brothers of the Orient. The Christians of the Orient, they also bring their own tradition. but they always respected the different Christian confessions. They never had a war, one confession against the other, like we had in Europe. And so we lost our credibility. And the Christian faith can also be credible for the world of today when they live these rich traditions in unity, but respecting the differences.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Brother Andreas Knopp. Although our faith and freedoms as Christians are under assault on multiple fronts, there is no current threat to Christians globally that is more virulent than militant Islam. In his book, The Last Christians: Stories of Persecution, Flight, and Resilience in the Middle East, Brother Andreas Knopp chronicles the tragic plight of Aramaic Christians, those still speaking the actual language of Jesus, as they have suffered unimaginable atrocities at the hands of global Islamic jihadists. Readers will be inspired by the unshakable devotion of Christians who have lost everything and yet count it all joy for Christ. Receive your copy of The Last Christians: Stories of Persecution, Flight, and Resilience in the Middle East as our thanks for your gift. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. You can also text Muslim to 41444. That's text Muslim to 41444. Or visit equip.org. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly with more of this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Dr. Eben Alexander's wildly popular near-death experience book, Proof of Heaven, assures us that no matter what we do in this life, only unconditional love and joy await us in the world to come. But our Lord warned that while the gate to hell is wide, the road to it broad, and those who enter through it are many, the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Your generous support lets Hank Hanegraaff and CRI speak out against the lies that lead to hell. In appreciation for your gift today, we'll rush you Hank's book, Afterlife, What You Need to Know About Heaven, the Hereafter, and Near-Death Experiences, filled with answers to your questions about life after death. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. Again, that's equip.org. So rapid and pandemic has been the decline of biblical literacy and spiritual discernment that our once unimaginable post-truth culture is effectively becoming an anti-truth culture. While the sun is setting on the Western Church, Islam is now the fastest growing religion in the world. This means that it's not simply enough to be aware of this threat. Christians need to wake up, stand up, and speak up. This means being able to counter the outright lies about Islam that otherwise will go unchecked with horrendous consequences. And that's what Hank Hanegraaff's book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion, will enable you to do. To receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, call 888-7000-CRI. Make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit equip.org. A deeper understanding of the Bible's principles and truths will improve the spiritual, moral, and ethical problems facing our nation. Yet the obstacle isn't that the Bible doesn't speak to our greatest needs or answer our deepest questions. It's that the average person lacks the time and tools to extract the answers. That's why Hank Hanegraaff wrote the complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, revised and updated. This expanded edition addresses over 210 of the top questions he's received as host of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Hank has taken the complex and made it simple and memorable. Receive the revised and updated complete Bible Answer Book as our thank you for your gift by calling 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit equip.org. That's equip.org. On this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff, we're bringing to you an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast, featuring Hank's conversation with Brother Andreas Knopp, author of The Last Christians, Stories of Persecution, Flight, and Resilience in the Middle East. To receive your copy of The Last Christians as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and Andreas Knopp.
The Christian faith can also be credible for the world of today when they live these rich traditions in unity but respecting the differences. And I think also in front of the Islam, when we Christians, we are not accepting each other, how we can be a witness to the Islam when we are just not bearing witness to the unity of the faith and of the different churches.
It sounds like what C.S. Lewis referred to, and it wasn't original with him, of course, but he wrote a book called Mere Christianity. That phrase, mere Christianity, often sum up in essentials unity, non-essentials liberty, and in all things charity. And in just expanding on that just a little bit, I'm thinking about sometimes in the West, Western evangelicals do not seem to care a whole lot about the plight of Christians in the Middle East who are facing mass genocide. And oftentimes it is because they perceive those Christians as being Orthodox Christians, Coptic Christians, Christians that they think are worshiping a dead liturgy and therefore they're not Christians at all. And so there's this separation, there's this unnatural bifurcation within the Christian faith because we don't recognize the richness of traditions other than our own.
Yes, I think there's a very important point that you are mentioning now, Hank. I think the Western Christianity, they also neglected to know something about the Eastern Christianity. So they were only proud of their own tradition, or they wanted to dominate the Eastern churches. That was just a problem of the Roman Catholic Church. I'm Roman Catholic, but the popes in some centuries, they wanted to dominate also the Eastern Church and not to recognize their own richness of tradition, spirituality, liturgy. They wanted to make Latin all the Christian world. And that was a big, big mistake. And today we have to recognize that we didn't take enough care to see our brothers and sisters in the Orient. And so they got victims of genocide, of extermination, of being pulled out of their countries. Because we didn't see them and with really eyes of brothers and sisters.
You know, it's interesting. You sort of underscored this, but as an academic, though you're living the life of Christ through the expression of the little brothers, as an academic, I think you might realize better than most that the West has this snarling logicality. In other words, we have to explain everything in complicated fashion, whereas Eastern Christians oftentimes leave those things that we can apprehend but not comprehend in the land of mystery. So, for example, we say about the Trinity, we apprehend it, we can't comprehend it. About the incarnation, it's something that we believe, Christ, one person with two natures, but that's incomprehensible to us. The Eucharist is another example. Or the Mass, this becomes something that we believe is the real presence of Christ. And yet, in the East, this is not explained. It is rightly, I think, left in the realm of the Mysterium Tremendum et Fascinans.
Yes, I think they kept more the respect that so we cannot understand the mystery of God. And important is not to understand with the head, but to live it with your hands. So to live the example of Christ in everyday life, to live solidarity and brotherhood, and not to understand God with conceptions and ideas that maybe was important for to distinguish, but nobody is converted to Christianity by reading the dogmatic book, but by seeing a Christian living today in sharing his life with the poor people or to be engaged for freedom, for the creation, for fighting for justice. This is the point where people are discovering Christian faith.
Maybe you can expand on that a little bit. I think this is really interesting for people listening in to understand the difference about what you communicated as intellectual knowledge, knowing about God, and then knowing God, the difference between knowing and knowing.
Very
in
good.
Other words,
very good.
Yeah, so you have experienced Christ by becoming a servant of Jesus Christ, by emulating the way of Christ. And perhaps you can explain, as very few can, what it means for Christ to become more real than the flesh upon your own bones, because you're living the way of Christ.
So for me and for my brothers, it's the first thing to read and to read and to read the gospel. So in the hope that our soul will be transformed. So to feel like Christ, to know the inner spirit of Christ, and to learn to see with the eyes of Christ, to learn to hear with the ears of Christ. So that I think this is the important thing, that this is an inner movement, to know Christ more and more. And then in your everyday life, you will discover what would be now the decision of Christ, his action, how he would react in a certain situation, if you have this inner feeling of him.
You are involved with what we would call the ascetic practices of the church. I oftentimes talk about this as the spiritual gymnasium. In other words, you're involved in prayer. You're involved in almsgiving. You're involved in those graces by which we can attain union with God or fellowship within the Trinity. Talk about the significance of real Christianity through that spiritual gymnasium.
Oh, that is a long theme, but I think one thing is to be faithful to prayer and to reading the gospel. We need also a rhythm, so not to let go, let it be, but really to be faithful every day, to find a certain form in which you are nearby to the person which loves you. God loves us in Jesus Christ. And so it becomes an inner wish. I want to be near to him. I want to answer to the gift of his love. But this every relationship needs a certain regularity. And this may be, this is the ascetic. Ascetic may mean really to be faithful to a certain rhythm and to certain exercises. And then nobody can be a Christian alone. Christianity, you can only live in sharing with the sisters and with brothers. So we need the community. We need people who are true with us, who help us to see our own difficulties, our own where we are injured, where we have problems, so that they are true with us. And that helps us to be true with ourselves and true with God. So the community is very important.
Yeah, I think you've...
You need also, yes?
No, I was just going to say, sorry to interrupt you, but I was going to say that that is such a salient point to make to the Christian community, because there's so much rugged individualism within Christianity. And as you've correctly pointed out, Christianity is not a Lone Ranger endeavor. It is a communal existence. I mean, when you're baptized, you're baptized into a community of faith. When you take communion, you do that in community. We do the work of Christ not in isolation, but we do it, as Romans 12 makes clear, we do it as a community of faith.
Yes, that's just very important. And everybody can live this in his own way and fashion. So I am living with three brothers of the same congregation. Others are living in families, or they look in a parish for groups, or they have a prayer group, or they have a group of sharing, a group of solidarity with refugees. But we need this experience of being brothers and sisters.
Yes, and you know, when you talk about the experience of being brothers and sisters, I want to kind of segue into your book, The Last Christians, an extraordinary book. The first thing I want to say is that you are an extraordinary writer. I've almost written 30 books now, so I know a little bit about writing, and your book is just riveting. But I think what makes it riveting is that you had a dramatic change of direction that was precipitated by the funeral of a friend of yours. And so God took you on an unexpected journey. You saw the persecution of Christians firsthand, and rather than turn a blind eye to it, have it just be a momentary experience, it really changed your life.
Yes, that's true. But the first change was just when the refugees arrived in our quarter. We are living in a quarter which was constructed in the communist times, so these are blocks of flats, very gray and simple, and a lot of flats are empty. Here now where I'm speaking, five flats above me are empty. So it's also a very sad situation. But 3 years ago, the first refugees came in our quarter. And there I discovered also there are Christians among the refugees. For me, this was a new thing. There are coming Christians which speak Aramaic, the language of Jesus, until to today. They celebrate the liturgy in Aramaic. They pray Our Father in Aramaic. So I heard for the first time in my life how Jesus spoke the words of the Our Father in the original way. And I was very astonished, and then I got friend of these new neighbors. And through these new neighbors, I discovered the rich history of the Christians in Orient.
We'll pick up Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Brother Andreas Knopp in just a few moments. The Bible Answer Man broadcast and CRI's growing array of outreaches have never been more needed than they are today. And that's why we won't be shy in asking you to stand shoulder to shoulder with the Christian Research Institute through your persistent prayers and generous financial support. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and CRI in the battle for life and truth, and receive your copy of The Last Christians, Stories of Persecution, Flight, and Resilience in the Middle East as our thanks for your gift. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. You can also text Muslim to 41444 or visit equip.org. We'll be back after a quick break with more of the Hank Unplugged podcast interview with poet, priest, and prolific author Andreas Knopp on this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. With over 500,000 copies in print, Hank Hanegraaff's Bible Answer books were born out of his many years of hosting the Bible Answer Man broadcast. He's taken his on-air answers to questions and chiseled them until only the gems emerge. Questions involving biblical interpretation, cults, science, ethics, apparent contradictions, and much more. This remarkable collection of concise answers is now even better. My goal, says Hank, is to take the complex and make it simple and memorable. Receive your copy of the complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, revised and updated, as our thank you for your gift by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. That's equip.org. The history of Islam is one of wanton carnage and horrific oppression, and it has been whitewashed beyond recognition by our politically correct elites. According to credible sources, 120 million Africans, 80 million Hindus, 60 million Christians, 10 million Buddhists have been slaughtered in the name of Islam. And that doesn't include the millions of Muslims killed by other Muslims. Islam is the only significant religious system in the history of the human race with a socio-political structure of laws that mandate violence against the infidel. Read Hank Hanegraaff's stunning book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion. Receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership when you call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. Dr. Eben Alexander's wildly popular near-death experience book, Proof of Heaven, assures us that no matter what we do in this life, only unconditional love and joy await us in the world to come. But our Lord warned that while the gate to hell is wide, the road to it broad, and those who enter through it are many, the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Your generous support lets Hank Hanegraaff and CRI speak out against the lies that lead to hell. In appreciation for your gift today, we'll rush you Hank's book, Afterlife, What You Need to Know About Heaven, the Hereafter, and Near-Death Experiences, filled with answers to your questions about life after death. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. Again, that's equip.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. The book, The Last Christians, Stories of Persecution, Flight, and Resilience in the Middle East by Andreas Knopp, should awaken all Christians to the savagery perpetrated by radical Islamists and their agenda of conquest fueled by fundamentalist convictions regarding Muhammad and the Quran. There is no current threat to Christians globally that is more virulent than militant Islam. Receive your copy of The Last Christians as our thanks for your gift. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Brother Andreas Knopp.
3 years ago, the first refugees came in our quarter. And there I discovered also there are Christians among the refugees. For me, this was a new thing. There are coming Christians which speak Aramaic, the language of Jesus, until to today. They celebrate the liturgy in Aramaic. They pray Our Father in Aramaic. So I heard for the first time in my life how Jesus spoke the words of the Our Father in the original way. And I was very astonished, and then I got friend of these new neighbors. And through these new neighbors, I discovered the rich history of the Christians in Orient. And 2 years ago, I could accompany one of these men to the north of Iraq. his father died, and he wanted to go to the funeral to pray for him. And he asked me, do you come with me? And I said, okay, I come with you. And that was not expected how fast we could organize this journey. Because from one day to the other, to go to the north of Iraq with all the papers, but all was prepared. I think it was the hand of God who prepared that. And so I could make this journey. And I saw the refugee camps, and I participated at the liturgies. I spoke with a lot of Christians who lost all their goods, who were expelled from Mosul, from Karakosh, from the old Christian cities there. And I met the architect of some churches, and all churches were destroyed by the Islamic State. So I was very touched by these meetings. And these stories, they have to be written down. We shouldn't forget the stories of persecution of these Christians. Now they are in Europe, in USA, in Australia, in New Zealand. But they bring with them very rich history, and we have to help them to preserve this history.
Can you give us a little sense of why you titled your book, The Last Christians? Whenever I read that title, it's indicative to me of the fact that mass genocide is taking place, but we're largely unaware of it. It seems very similar to what happened at the turn of the century with the Armenians. You had mass genocide against the Armenians, and most people, if you tell them what happened in the city of Smyrna, where it was manifestly destroyed, they look at you like you're talking a different language. They simply know nothing about it. They remember the Holocaust, but they don't remember the genocide against the Armenians. They don't remember what happened in Asia Minor. So whenever I see this title of your book, it's haunting to me. The Last Christians, mass genocide taking place. The stories, however, are encouraging in some ways, because in an odd way, you think back to the first century and you see the blood of the martyrs becoming the seed of the church.
So that is also my hope, that all the suffering of these Christians was not in vain, but that can help us to rediscover our own roots, to rediscover the truth of the gospel. So The Last Christians, I choose this title because it's true that the Syriac church, the church of the Orthodox Syrian Christians, they have still the Aramaic as the language of their liturgy, and there were existing some villages and even a town which spoke Aramaic. But now all is destroyed. 2 years ago, they all had to leave their homelands. And now this original church with the language of Jesus doesn't exist anymore in the place of the Iraq or in Syria. There rest some small communities, but 2 or 3 years ago, it was still a big community. And now they are the last Christians speaking the Aramaic, but not only the language, but also to be very near to the gospel with their lives, for their witness, for their faithfulness, for their way of reading the gospel as a message of love of God, of the mercy of God, and which was never read in a way to be violent. They always were very faithful to the non-violence of Jesus. And so it's very hard to see that these communities are destroyed. The last Christians had to go from their homelands, where they were enrooted for 2,000 years. But as you told just now, I have also the hope that when we see them, when we listen to their stories, when we read their history, so that can inspirate our own faith, that can help us to live more faithful to the gospel and to live this hope that to be a victim as the martyrs, that is not the end, but that can be a new beginning. the end of Jesus at the cross was just the moment where God recreated the world. That was a beginning of a new world, of another world. And so I also hope for these refugees and for me and for our Western churches, when we listen to this message they bring to us, that we also can read the gospel in a new and deeper way.
Beautiful. I almost don't know what to say. So the last Christians, the title of your book, I want to expand on this a little bit, because in the West, I hear a lot of people talking about the fact that ISIS is being crushed, and therefore the Christians in the Middle East can return to their churches, that all is well in Syria and Iraq and other places where mass genocide has been committed against Christians. Give us a sense of what reality is today. I mean, you've already sort of alluded to it, but give us a sense of how that moniker, the last Christians, is still true. The Christians are facing tremendous persecution. The fact that ISIS is being crushed or might be crushed does not mean that suddenly persecution against Christians is going to cease.
Yes, in a certain way, this cruel state now is becoming weaker and weaker. But there are ideologies, and there is a fundamentalistic Islam which was preached for a long time and supported by Western governments, Saudi Arabia and Qatar, and this poison is still present. So you can win a war by weapons against the state, but an ideology you cannot destroy by weapons. It is necessary to work, to elaborate another way, which means education and culture. And so these countries need another education, another culture in which is appreciated the liberty of religion, the equality of men and women, democratic values. This cannot be brought by weapons. You cannot convert a country to democratic values by weapons and by an army, but this has to be an inner process. And there I see that the Western world, for a lot of time until to today, is supporting non-democratic states in the Middle East. And so I don't see for the moment that is really another way growing there, where Christians can live with liberty and with liberty of religion and being sure of their lives and being respected. And the tolerance in this moment, I don't see where this tolerance is really lived. So I think it will be a long way, but it's not a way by weapons, but by education and by culture.
That's beautiful. You know, in Islam, there's a very, very different worldview than the Christian worldview, in that Jesus Christ said, "Give unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, unto God the things that are God's." And in that, he pointed to the separation between church and state. If you look at Islam, you don't have that separation. Sharia is state, state is Sharia. And as a result of that, it seems to me that it is an ill-founded idea to try to force democracy into places like Iraq without doing the very thing you allude to. First, the hearts of people have to be changed before you can have that change of culture as well.
Yes, and I think this is a big problem for Islam, as you just said, because in Islam, just from the beginning, there was this mixture from politics and religion. Muhammad was a spiritual person, a religious leader, and at the same time, it was a statesman and a warrior. And so this confusion rested through the long time of Islamic history. But I see today there are Islamic teachers and intellectuals who are thinking in another way, because in the revelation of Muhammad, there were two different times. The first time in Mecca, where Muhammad was a spiritual leader in also preaching tolerance and respect. And then in the second time of Medina, he was more a political leader. And in the long time of Islam, the Quran was read with a key of understanding that Islam is politics and religion at the same time. In Christianity, we have another history, because Jesus never was a political leader. He didn't want to be the king with the sword in the hand. This was one of the temptations in the desert for Jesus. And he resisted to this temptation. I don't want to bring the gospel by force, by political force. And so Islam has to learn that. And this is a good development that there are intellectuals who are thinking this way, but it's only a small group. And I think that we as Christians, we have to help them and to support these groups of Islamic teachers who are preaching another way of reading Quran, this another key of understanding which separates political power and spiritual life.
Well, we've run out of time for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. To listen to this Hank Unplugged podcast interview with Andreas Knopp in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And if you like what you're listening to, be sure to leave a review on iTunes. If you'd like to stand shoulder to shoulder with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute in the battle for life and truth, and receive as our thanks for your gift the book, The Last Christians, Stories of Persecution, Flight, and Resilience in the Middle East, or any of the other resources mentioned on the broadcast today, just call our resource consultants now at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI. You can also text Muslim to 41444 or go online to equip.org. You can also write to us at CRI P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. The complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, revised and updated, is a comprehensive collection of the most often asked as well as most difficult questions Hank Hanegraaff has received in nearly three decades of hosting the Bible Answer Man broadcast. This expanded edition contains new entries, leading readers to a better understanding of God and our relationship to Him in Jesus Christ. The complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, revised and updated, is a comprehensive, handy, and attractive volume that you will return to again and again. Take your exploration of God's Word to new heights and receive the revised and updated Complete Bible Answer Book as our thank you for your gift by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. So rapid and pandemic has been the decline of biblical literacy and spiritual discernment that our once unimaginable post-truth culture is effectively becoming an anti-truth culture. While the sun is setting on the Western Church, Islam is now the fastest growing religion in the world. This means that it's not simply enough to be aware of this threat. Christians need to wake up, stand up, and speak up. This means being able to counter the outright lies about Islam that otherwise will go unchecked with horrendous consequences. And that's what Hank Hanegraaff's book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion, will enable you to do. To receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit equip.org.